150 years ago today, the Civil War was drawing to an end after 4 years of terrible bloodshed. It was March 4th, 1865, and President Abraham Lincoln stepped to the podium in front of the Capitol and delivered a message that asked mutual forgiveness. It was his second inaugural. Just 700 words that took just 10 minutes to deliver, but even for a man who is known for his speeches, this one really stands out. In fact, it's carved into the walls of the Lincoln Memorial. Of course, Lincoln's words on this day 150 years ago were some of his last. He was assassinated just a little more than a month later. We want to talk about this now with historian Vernon Burton, who is author of The Age of Lincoln. He joins us from Clemson University, where he's a professor of history, sociology, and computer science. Professor Burton, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's an honor, especially to talk about the United States' greatest president, I believe, and the second inaugural, one of the world's greatest speeches and one of America's greatest works of literature.
Set the stage for us on this day back in 1865.
Well, of course, the war had had a horrible cost, nearly 700,000 men killed. But the Union was now on the verge of victory. The Confederacy was broken. So the second inauguration was also a special triumph for Lincoln personally. He was now Father Abraham, the president who had saved or was saving the Union, which was in Lincoln's vision, as he called it, the last best hope on earth. And Lincoln carried at this time great gravitas when he gave the second inaugural.
Well, and in fact, he started his address by saying, now at the expiration of 4 years during which public declarations have been constantly called forth on every point and phase of the great contest, which still absorbs the attention and engrosses the energies of the nation, little that is new could be presented. What was his message to the people of the United States?
It's an extraordinary message. I think Lincoln's second inaugural is widely regarded by historians as his best speech. It was a prayer of confession for the nation. Lincoln's religious feelings had deepened during his first term as president, and he came to see God's hand in human events. Yet there remains, I think, the sense of Lincoln standing with the hopeless sinners, not the smugglers saved. Lincoln was not only, I think, the greatest president, but also the greatest theologian of the 19th century. As his speech shows, everyone else in that millennial age were certain that they knew God's will. And many were not willing to compromise because they actually believed they were doing God's will. Lincoln heard both Northern and Southern assertions that God was on their side, of course, but Lincoln was willing to admit he simply did not understand divine providence. Even when the outcome of the war was pretty much decided, Lincoln uses a subjunctive case. He uses, if God's will. Lincoln also said, of course, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we're in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and a lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. And Lincoln here is speaking about caring for those soldiers who fought to save the Union. That included more than 200,000 African Americans, and Lincoln had said that African American soldiers made a huge difference in turning the tide of war in his favor. When Lincoln speaks in the second inaugural and other places of unfinished business, I really believe he's speaking about race relations in America. I'm convinced he was harking back to the founding fathers, especially Thomas Jefferson's word, of course, that all men are created equal. And this was the great unfinished business of America's in Lincoln's time, and race remains our unfinished business.
So he was not gloating about a Union victory.
No, certainly not. He articulated a belief that the war was divine judgment for what he called a national sin of American slavery. He was not charging guilt to the South alone. He used inclusive language. All dreaded the war. All sought to avert it. Yet inexorably, unavoidably, and devoid of human instrumentality, the war came.
How was the speech received?
Well, it was mixed. It's sort of interesting for Lincoln because it's rare for him to show such confidence, but he predicted that the speech would wear as well, perhaps better, than anything I have produced, and he was right. The great black abolitionist Frederick Douglass had been very disappointed in Lincoln's first inaugural, but he loved the second inaugural, and he wrote in his diary, "The address sounded more like a sermon than a state paper." Newspapers' responses to Lincoln's speech were actually lukewarm. The New York Times criticized Lincoln for not boasting about the accomplishment of the Union or issuing ultimatums to the Confederacy. White Southerners in Rebellion, in particular, were puzzled by Lincoln's address. While Confederates had depicted Lincoln as irrelevant and even profane, his speech seemed to suggest that Lincoln was much more pious than they had painted him.
Well, and what about this idea that it was only 10 minutes long? You could never imagine today that an inaugural address would only last for 10 minutes. They go much longer than that.
That's right. There's only been one shorter. Washington had one shorter. And if you compare it with his first inaugural, you'll see. But Lincoln had carefully crafted this. And it's interesting, when Lincoln is carefully crafted, you have to study every word. He's trying to get a message across.
Now, just a little more than a month after he delivered this speech, he was assassinated at Ford's Theater in Washington, the 150th anniversary of which will be just a little more than a month from now. How did the nation respond when that happened?
Well, again, it was actually mixed, but it's as we look back on it, of course, it was a tremendous time of sadness for the Union. But I think you sort of have to back up to understand what's going on. To right after Lee's surrender, in fact, 2 days later, Lincoln gives a speech from his bedroom window. And in that audience was the assassin Booth, who declared after he heard Lincoln, and he uses the N-word and says there's going to be, to paraphrase, black citizenship, and by God, that'll be the last speech he will make. So I think it's interesting to look at it. We find out that Lincoln dies not for the Emancipation Proclamation, but for advocating black citizenship. I guess the one that really strikes me is the great black Civil War hero, Robert Smalls, who captures the planter, a ship, and sails it out of Charleston Harbor in South Carolina, is in naval battles. He meets with Lincoln. I think he actually influenced Lincoln in terms of his Gettysburg address when he asked Smalls, why did he risk his life, his men's, and his family? And he says, for freedom. And Smalls breaks down and cries and says, God help us now. And I say this because masculinity was different then. Smalls was about as tough a person as you could imagine, but men did cry. Lincoln, who was a great athlete and a great wrestler, could weep over sentimental poetry. So these are the kind of reactions that vary over time. The interesting thing, of course, is his death is he is shot on Good Friday, dies the next day, is tied up with Easter, and sort of the idea of making Lincoln sort of sacred that we get even today.
Well, and today, here we are, Vernon Burton, in your book, The Age of Lincoln, you talk about how he left a lasting legacy of the meaning of freedom in this country. Could you leave us with some thoughts about that?
I certainly can. Of course, he's seen as the man who saves the Union, the great emancipator, and the speech we look at, Malice Toward None. Lincoln himself said if he was going to be remembered for anything, it would be for the Emancipation Proclamation. But I believe his single greatest contribution was redefining what liberty meant in the United States, and then, therefore, for the world. Basically, I would argue he took our mission statement, that is, the Declaration of Independence, and put it into our rule book, the Constitution. We had all before that seen liberty as the state having all the rights. And then with Lincoln and Lincoln's legacy of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, people are guaranteed their freedom, equal treatment, and, in fact, the vote. So you have a different meaning of freedom with Lincoln that I think has inspired not only the United States, but the rest of the world. Lincoln understood something we often miss today. He knew that democracy was not static, that, in fact, it moves backwards and it can move forward. And I think this was an extraordinary leap forward with Lincoln's redefining liberty for the United States.
Historian Vernon Burton, a professor of history, sociology, and computer science at Clemson University. His book is The Age of Lincoln, and we're speaking with him about President Lincoln because President Lincoln delivered his second inaugural address 150 years ago today. Professor Burton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.